I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're talking about the great debaters, the stereotype-busting debate team at Wiley College during the Depression years. Oscar winners Denzel Washington and Forrest Whitaker lead the cast.
The other stars of the film are the debaters themselves, and they are played by Denzel Whitaker as James Farmer Jr., Jurnee Smollett as Samantha Book, and Nate Parker as Henry Lowe. They are here in the studio, here with me in Washington. Welcome.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Now, Denzel, I wanted to start with you. Your character is the only one of the three based on a real figure from history. The others are composites. But James Farmer Jr., he went on to become a very important civil rights leader. Was it scary playing somebody with a real history, with real relatives going around who could judge you?
It is. Well, now that you mention it, it is kind of scary. But it's one of those things we took on the responsibility. You know, I'm just happy to tell his story because it's one of those stories that needs to be heard.
Is it true that he really went to college at 14?
It's true, and he was actually on the debate team his sophomore year when he was 15.
Can you even imagine that?
I can. I mean, he was 6'2" and had like a James Earl voice, and, you know, me, on the other hand, I'm like 5'7".
Well, you no need to blow all the mystery. There's no need. Well, what are some of the other things you found out about him? Is there anything about him that really helped you define the way you chose to play him?
Well, I did talk to Melvin B. Tolson Jr., while we were doing our research. I got to sit down and chat with him. And, you know, just for him to tell me what they went through, you know, at that time and when he was a child and how he would have to compromise himself and say, yes, sir, instead of yes, sir. He said he was very into his studies and also into his women, too.
Really?
So, yes. Well, I mean, he was attracted at the time, which I think, you know, naturally, any 14-year-old go to college and see pretty women.
You know, especially this particular
example,
woman right
Ms.
here.
Example, Miss Smollett over there.
That's right.
Miss Jurnee Smollett.
Well, Jurnee, how about many people would know you from Eve's Bayou. What attracted you to this role?
My goodness, when I read the script about a year and a half ago, I was blown away by the fact that, one, I had never heard of the story before, and two, how important it is for all of us to know about this story. And I passionately wanted to be a part of that process of bringing these characters to life. And the fact that as a female character, it's rare that I get to go after a role like this where I'm a part of the action, you know? And that's what's exciting to me. This was something I could really sink my teeth into.
You weren't a bystander. You weren't the cheerleader. You weren't the
girlfriend. I wasn't the set dressing, you know? I wasn't the one just on the sidelines cheering everyone on. I was trying to be a part of the gentleman's club, as it was, but still, you know, stomping along with them. You know, I don't like playing the stereotypical characters, whether it's a black woman or just a woman. You know, I don't like playing into what we've seen before. And it was an opportunity also to pay tribute to women like Ida B. Wells and Charlotte E. Ray and Eleanor Roosevelt. You know, these women who've come before me and laid the path for the Barbara Jordans and the Janet Smollett's and the Angela Davises. You know, we are products of Samantha Book. Mm-hmm. And that's,
was there anything in particular that you drew upon in shaping your character?
You know, we all face something in our life one time or another where someone's going to try to make us feel inferior. And someone's going to try to dictate to us where our place is. Whether you're a female and someone believes your place is in the kitchen, or whether you are black and someone believes your place is in the labor force, or, you know, whatever that is, if you have a dream, someone's going to tell you that that dream's impossible. And I've been told that plenty of times, even in my field in 2007. So I could definitely relate to her on that level.
Nate Parker, all the performances in this film are great, but your, I think, performance is being noted for the intensity of your character. Your character is older than that of the other students in the film. Talk to me about what role you think he is meant to play.
Well, basically, you know, he has a foot in the street and a foot in school. And as a black man in 1935, you know, constantly having to compromise yourself every single day and daily being stripped of your dignity and still having to try to find a reason to hold your head and have some kind of pride left, I really wanted to capture that inner conflict of what it must have been like to walk down those streets. One of the things I did, I got a lot of those pictures of the lynchings, you know, so I had maybe 10 or 12 and I put them on my mirror. So every time I walked out of that trailer, I was reminded of this period and reminded what was going on inside of me. You know, so, you know, Henry Lowe, he is a womanizer, but he's a womanizer for a reason. You know, he is an alcoholic, but he's an alcoholic for a reason. You know, those things tried to provide some kind of substance in his life, and try to put back and fill in those pieces of the puzzle that were missing, that were taken from society at that time.
I want to talk a little bit more about this because you've gotten into an area that is interesting to me. One of the things that strikes me about this film is it doesn't shy away from the indignities that African Americans suffered, the daily ones. Mm-hmm. That, no matter how well educated they were, no matter how well spoken they were, their dignity could be threatened, their lives could be threatened. Now, you all grew up in an era of Oprah Winfrey and Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice. How did you get into Denzel a space where you could imagine what it was like to live with that kind of fear?
It's really hard to get into that space until you actually get on set. Most of the time in my audition, I'd reflect on just the small stories my grandfather had taught me or the small stories I read in my textbook. But over the course of this movie, it's different when you get there to set and you see like a hanging body, there the whole day while you're getting prepared to film the scene. It's different when you have like 20, 30, 50 odd extras. They're lynching a tire and they're ready to come after you. That to me is when it really all struck me. That's when I was like, really, I could feel a deeper connection with my ancestors. Not only that, but with my grandfather.
Mm-hmm. Junie, what about you?
There were a number of things. The research really helped us out a lot. There's this book called Without Sanctuary. And it explains how things like lynchings were such a quote-unquote picnic, and that's where the word comes from, and how they would gather around. Hundreds of people would come and quote-unquote celebrate what was about to happen. They would bring their children. They would bring their wives. And everyone would gather around and take a picture, and this picture was put on the back of a postcard. And this postcard was sent around to family members around the nation. And it was a bragging tool.
The film is filled with these kinds of little nuggets of history lessons, and we have a short clip where Professor Tolson explains some of the history of that. Let's play that.
Tell us about your father.
Why don't you tell us something about your father?
We're trying to get to know each other, Mr. Lowe.
I was trying to get to know you, Mr. Tolson.
Well, I'm not the one on the debate team.
Are we not engaged in a debate right now?
All right. I'll take the affirmative. Take the meanest, most restless nigger. Strip him of his clothes in front of the remaining male niggers, female niggers, and nigger infants. Tar and feather him. Tie each leg to a horse facing an opposite direction, set him on fire, and beat both horses until they tear him apart in front of the male, female, and nigger infants.
Henry Lowe and Melvin Tolson, that relationship is a relationship that needs to be echoed in 2007. By our mentors and by our role models to these young people, because we very often we see these people and we complain about them. I'm speaking as an adult now. We see these people, we complain about them. We talk to our friends about them. We talk about them in church. We pray for them, but we don't give our most precious asset that 5 minutes of time that could change their lives, or we go and we approach them.
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin. You're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm talking with the young actors from the new film, The Great Debaters, Jurnee Smollett, Nate Parker, and Denzel Whitaker. The other thing that this film does, it insists on the importance of striving for excellence at every turn. Mm-hmm. Here's another short clip, and it's another exchange between Professor Tolson and your character, Henry Lowe. Here it is.
I remember you a couple of years ago, and you disappeared. What happened?
I come and go. Whenever it suits me.
Suspensions?
Leaves of absence.
Why'd you come back?
School's the only place you can read all day. Except prison.
I want you to come by my house tonight, 7:30, corner of Junior Campus.
How would I do that?
Holding tryouts for the debate team.
You sure you want somebody like me?
No. That's why you're trying out. 7:30. Union Campus.
He will not give him a pass.
And that's the moment where my life began to change as the character. That's when the arc started to go in a different direction. Henry Lowe's given up on life in so many ways, and he does what he does more out of selfish reasons. He's an intellect, and he reads and he absorbs, but not just to be the smartest, but because he wants to show them. That's his only avenue of resistance. And as this story progresses, he understands, okay, this young man, little James Jr., he's innocent. He hasn't been jaded as I have. So maybe it's not too late for him, mm-hmm.
Trinity, there's a scene where you are debating against a white school. Mm-hmm. And first of all, the debate has to be held off campus, which
in
is
a tent.
In a tent. And secondly, the people literally get up and leave while you're speaking.
But my opponent says today is not the day for whites and coloreds to go to the same college, to share the same campus, to walk in the same classroom. Well, would you kindly tell me when is that day gonna come? Is it gonna come tomorrow? Is it gonna come next week? In 100 years? Never? No, the time for justice, the time for freedom, and the time for equality is always right now.
What was that like for you?
You know what? It was really emotional for me because I could see their stares. I could see their disbelief in me, and to defy my circumstances and not allow them to define me was something that rarely people did. So it was really emotional. I mean, I speak in schools a lot in East LA, and actually I've done it all over the nation. And it always tears at my heartstrings when I speak in these schools and see the old textbooks and there's no computers and there's gum on the floor, and sometimes I've gone through metal detectors. And then I leave those schools and drive a few miles down the street to pick up my 14-year-old brother who's in the 9th grade, and he's got Apple computers at his school, and he's got teachers who only have like 20-something children in the classroom, and they're getting paid thousands of dollars more than the teachers just a few miles away. I mean, you know, it's relevant for today, that debate that I make. It's really relevant that why is it that some children nowadays don't have the access to education like other children do? And now, I mean, it's not just color. It's class. You know, it's the way the system is designed, and it's very, very frustrating. So I could make that whole debate personal.
I see you learned your lesson well. I think you're ready. You're getting revved up for the debate. I'm not going to take you. I'm not going to try to take you on. Nathan Denzel, you have a very intense scene together. And Denzel, you referred to this earlier, where the debate team encounters a lynch mob. And the effect that it has on each of your characters is quite profound.
You're never going to forget what you saw out there. Do you understand? You're never going to forget what you saw out there. You can hang the easiest part of it sometimes. Sometimes they cut your little fingers off, your toes, your nose, your ears. Sometimes they cut your privates off. Sometimes they skin you alive. You'll never be able to forget.
As I like to say with James Farmer, he was a shelter. You know, encountering this lynching scene and then seeing just somebody who he kind of looks up to. Nate's character, Lo, is like, I guess you could say, a second or almost half of a father to him. And just seeing him, you know, fight what he was going through and always running to the bar for answers. And then for me, just to see the lynching scene, it's kind of like stripping my social innocence.
Nate, what do you think?
My character needed him to understand that it was to let him know, yeah, your dad is a preacher. Yes, he's a professor, but you are black and he is black. And this is what black people go through here. Regardless of your status, regardless of where you are in life.
But it also forces you to ask yourself some hard questions, which
sure.
is if you live in a country in which you have no rights,
right.
your dignity does not have to be respected, your personal safety doesn't have to be
right.
respected, what is the purpose of being excellent? What is the purpose
mm-hmm. right.
of continuing to strive for perfection?
Right. Right.
So what answer did you all come up with for yourselves?
See, that's exactly when we got in the confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're debating other Negro colleges on the subjects that we all stand for, but we're not making any progress. And Nate, you know, Lowe's character was the one to tell me, you know, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're making a contribution to society by debating Oklahoma City University. We're making a contribution by going on to actually debate Harvard.
Jenny, what answer did you come up with?
You know, the saying that Eleanor Roosevelt says that no one can make you feel inferior without your consent. And I thought, well, you know what? If we quit, we give them that consent. We give them the consent to make us feel bad and make us just crawl up in a little ball and just stop, you know. And even though we don't see the progress now, it's something that is built upon, and it's a domino effect. You know, if you stop, then you're telling them that they're right.
Mm-hmm. Denzel, what do you want people to get from this film?
What I want people to get from this film is to be conscious about what happened. And also I want people to take away the power in your words. You know, it's something to be said about using your words to shut down your opponent instead of using your fist. We can still make a change. We can let our voice be heard.
You know what, if I could just add to that, is that what Denzel Washington did that was ingenious is that he dissected the shades of gray. You know, and that was one thing that was really important to him. He said, it's not about black or white. It's the shades of gray that fascinates him. You know, you have the sharecroppers being prejudiced one minute and then joining together in the next minute in a sharecroppers union because it was going to benefit them. You know, it's easy to make a film just about, oh, things are bad, hard times. But it's more difficult to make a film that speaks about something being bad. And in spite of all of that turmoil and all of that depression, these people rise above that.
Speaking of which, I heard that, is this true that you all actually had to go to debate camp in preparation
for
this?
Yes, we did.
We absolutely
what
did.
Was that like?
Well, first day we met with Melvin Tolson Jr. and Henrietta Wells and Mrs. McClurry and Dr. Mm-hmm. Freeman. And then the next day.
Henrietta Wells being a former debater.
The lady my character is based on.
And
yes.
Mm-hmm. Was she as cute as you?
Oh, she was cuter.
She was cute.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
I love her. She and I have become like family.
And Dr. Freeman being the director of the
Texas Southern University
debate team.
Yes. So the next day we were trained by his team, actually, in parliamentary and impromptu styles of debating.
How'd y'all do? Tell the truth.
Hey.
We won.
I got to say, the underdog came back.
You debated the freshman team. Now, Nate, was that quite fair? I mean, you're an accomplished graduate of the University of Oklahoma. I mean,
and it's true. For that reason, I said to myself, even more than ever, we're going to go hard. We were studying. CNN all night, and you know, we're looking
reading
at the newspaper.
The Wall Street Journal.
We're very focused. Mm-hmm. You know, Denzel said, he said, you know, you guys better win. He said, I expect you to win. You're actors.
See, but you know, it's really not fair because you can cry on cue. That's not fair at all.
Journey, did you break a little tear in there?
No, I didn't. I was the opposite.
Journey was vicious. And then
I was the raging Cajun.
Hey.
Denzel Whitaker, Journey Smollett, and Nate Parker are starring in the new movie, The Great Debaters. They were kind enough to join us here in our studio in Washington. The film opens Christmas Day, and you can find a link to our guests and The Great Debaters at our website, npr.org/tellmemore. Thank you all so much for speaking
with
us.
Thank you so much.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. Let's talk more tomorrow.